Hello, Prestige Heads, and welcome to American Prestige. I'm Danny Bessner, here as always with my friend and comrade, Derek Davison, and we're very excited to welcome back to the podcast, Mark Ames. Mark is the co-host of the Radio War Nerd podcast, and he's been very kind to come and talk to us about Russia and Ukraine over the last year or so. So, Mark, thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you guys for having me on. It's really an honor. I love your show, and really glad to be on. But I just before we go on, I have to say something. Congratulations. I'm very late to the party, I know, but congratulations for winding up on the Kremlin's list of and of undesirables. You are a threat.
I am. Me and Larry Summers and a bunch of other notables.
That thoroughly researched list that they put out.
Yeah, just brilliant.
Mark, you must be sanctioned,
and I want to just say, as far as I know, well, put it.
Wow, I am, and you're not. That's wild.
No, I don't know what I can talk about here, but let's just say I know that there is a judgment hanging over me from a certain oligarch close to the Kremlin, and that is... So, you know, so that's the one thing that keeps me far away.
Yeah.
And I know about that. Yeah.
I can't return to my ancestral homeland. Now. Yeah. It's wild. You know,
I did want to say, because of my notorious close ties to Putin and the Kremlin, that for a small fee, I could make this problem go away. Anyway.
Thanks. We had Michael Stuhlbarg on recently, and I told him at the end of the podcast, he's like, oh my God, holy shit. Yeah. It's a very bizarre thing to have happened.
Really so out of the blue. I mean, as you guys pointed out, it just shows just how, you know, as they say, Gogol-esque their research department is, like, where they came up with that.
Yeah, it seems like they chose a couple of universities, basically, and went through and chose people who had titles like Professor of International Relations. That is, like, my sense of what happened. So,
honestly, my best bet is that there's some other Daniel, and they just, you know, I don't know. I mean, because if they actually read your
stuff. Are you implying I'm not a
I know.
What are you implying, Mark?
It's just usually, oftentimes with these things, and it's not just Russia, it's a lot of places, it turns out to be something so dumb and so much less than meets the eye.
It's bureaucracy.
Exactly.
I mean, like, it's Kafka-esque in a literal sense, you know, it shows, like, the foibles of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
thank you for reminding me.
But that is an honor. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah,
it is a nasty regime, and it's an honor to be marked as a bad guy from this.
Yeah, it was wild, to say the least. So, look at this transition. Speaking about Russia, could you tell us a little bit about these Russian advances in the East?
Yeah, it's really definitely picked up in the last couple of months, and it's accelerated week by week. And by accelerated, we're still talking about very slow advances, I guess, by some other wars or by wars that, I don't know, people might expect a lot more movement. This is not a war of movement in general, as certainly after the first 6 months. But the biggest battle, the most important sort of battle that was won by the Russians. Well, first you had the failure of the counteroffensive, which really blew a hole through the Ukrainian forces. And then combined with not getting new arms deliveries, it was delayed, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, for many months. So they were outgunned as well as outnumbered. It reached a point where the Russians have been very successful. This hasn't been talked about much, have been very successful at mobilizing, unlike Ukraine. and the Russians really ground them down in Avdiivka, which is one of these fortress cities in the Donbas. And, you know, they'd been fighting that for a long time. It seemed impenetrable. And I think the Russians understood sort of in the fall that Ukraine was vulnerable, and it moved very slowly from the fall through, you know, the turn of the year to into 2024. But in February, the collapse happened pretty quickly. It started to really build just as Zelensky fired the previous commander in chief, Zaluzhny, and put in Sirski, who's the new commander in chief, who's a loyalist.
So, Mark, if you don't mind me asking, what have been the explanations for this breakthrough?
So, like I said, I mean, manpower. I think primarily, it's a manpower problem. Units have been absolutely decimated. If you dig through the stories, and it's hard to find them because our press generally tries to portray, generally sees his job as morale booster for the war, you know, so you have to dig through it. You have to follow people who are following Ukraine media and so on. Units have been decimated, 80% casualties, you know, they've been hollowed out.
Just a quick question. Is that due to tactics or due to technological attrition, technological superiority on the Russian side? Or is it just that Russia is literally able to throw more people at the into the grinder?
I think it's a combination of everything, to be honest. I think morale is a lot lower, is breaking down among the Ukrainians. You know, they've not been able to get time off. They're not getting rotated the way they were in the first 6 months because of the manpower shortage. So I think morale is a big issue. The sense that the war is never going to end is really hitting their morale. And the Russians do have a larger manpower pool. And as I said, they have no manpower problems at the moment between volunteers and mobilization. And so they are getting rotated. Unlike the first 6 months, actually, the Russians weren't getting rotated, and that was part of their problem. They were undermanned and not getting rotated. So that's really flipped. But strategy, I guess, would have been is a bigger issue. Lack of ammo is hurting. Lack of air cover. I mean, the Russians are able to use close air support now in a way that they weren't for, you know, much of the first year and a half of the war. Recently, as they moved beyond Avdiivka into Achiryetnya, I should just say, you know, after they took Avdiivka in February, really the Ukrainians, first of all, they should have set up defensive works, but because strategically they are still having such a hard time accepting the fact that they need to fight a defensive war rather than retake territory, which also means admitting to everybody that, and yourself, that the Russians are not Muscovy apes who only, you know, fight if a gun is pointed at their heads, and that they're orcs and that they're dumb and zombies and so on. But you have to admit that you're fighting a formidable fighter, which is also demoralizing when you've been told all along that they're apes. So they have not been fighting as they should have been, if you ask me. And I think a lot of people, like, they should have been fighting a defensive war for quite a while.
I mean, the famous offense-defense balance, right? It favors defense in these types of mobile wars. Yeah,
exactly.
The classic situation. That's so interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way, how the ideology really plays into the choice of tactics.
And they had to have, you know, also to get the huge store of weapons that they got and the weapons shipments they got sort of from the middle end of 2022 through monies that were allocated in 2022, turning into weapons deliveries in 2023, they had to really promise also that they were going to wage this big counteroffensive and cut the land corridor in two, which was suicide. It was suicide. And nobody wanted to admit it to anybody else.
So that's my question. So that's a grand strategic choice, almost, you know, to do a counteroffensive like that. So what are the explanations for why they chose a strategy which just has flat out failed?
Well, because everybody had convinced themselves that Russia is.